I love the fact that it says recording in progress when you start recording.
Yeah, it makes you like say, got it, you know?
You're like, all right, it's time to go. So it's go time, Shannon. So tonight, Shannon, all the way from Salt Lake City via the internet. And Shannon, how about we start with just a little intro from you? Tell us who you are in a nutshell.
Okay. I'm Shannon Mayo. I grew up in Georgia, and then I started guiding in Maine in 2016 with Dick and John. And I stuck around for a while. Last year was the first year I didn't do that. So I guided for 5 years. And then 3 years ago, I got into ski patrol, and I've kind of transitioned into doing that year round, ski patrol and bike patrol. So I work in avalanche mitigation and all the fun stuff, ski and pow, that patrollers get to do. And that's kind of most of my gig.
Do you get to throw explosives?
I do hold bombs.
Wow. Nice. Very awesome.
I have a license.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. We can talk about that some other point, or at least later. Sounds very exciting. I'm sure there's a ton of like rules and regulations that it's actually like not nearly as exciting, except for when they go boom.
Yeah.
And then the whole slope goes. All right. So, well, I was thinking, Shannon, that our conversation tonight was going to be about your arc in the outdoor field. So starting kind of with, maybe I would say there's a reason why you chose to want to get into some rock guiding as kind of specifying in that type of guiding. So maybe kind of walk us through, like, how did you even get to that point where you're like, I think I want to specialize in this, so I'm going to look for that opportunity. Like, was it through school, some other type of entry to that? What was your arc into that?
Yeah. So I started climbing right when I got into college, and I was in the Southeast. So what you do there is boulder. So I bouldered for about 2 years straight, just kind of getting into everything. And I worked at a climbing gym, but then I started working for my outdoor adventures program at Kennesaw State University. And that got me into more of like trip leading. We would do backpacking, kayaking, mountain biking, and climbing. But I was never like a climbing guide on those trips. I was just like the trip leader. So I was more responsible for soft skills and that kind of stuff, because I didn't have any certifications yet. But I loved climbing and I wanted to get more into it. I just kind of started sport climbing when I went to AOR, the conference, and I met Dick and John and we chatted, and I decided to apply for actually the business internship that Brad was kind of offering.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that.
That's how I came in.
Were you actually the business intern?
I was. Surprise, surprise. Because I have a business degree and I was working on my business management degree. And so everyone says, like, find what you love and make it your job and you won't work a day in your life or whatever. So I was like, cool, I'll go see if I can get into like the business side of climbing. But lucky for all of us, I did not do much business that summer. I just did a lot of climbing. That was the first year I think we had offered that kind of position and nobody really knew what I was supposed to be doing, myself included.
yeah.
So I did mostly what every other intern did. I just also helped Brad occasionally in the office a little more than everyone else and did some emailing and marketing stuff for him. But I started at the SPI course. First thing, I'd never placed a CAM. So that was fun. And spent the whole internship year just trying to understand what this guiding thing even entailed. Where can I go from here?
Well, geez, you know, there's a lot of things that we could go just about the business intern in general. So let's think about like that summer. Because I think my impression is that when people go through the internship, it can be a very formative block of time. Because interns work super hard. Like, I think you have very hard jobs when you're an intern. You're doing these longer trips. So you have, you know, more logistics than just a day of putting together rock guiding. You're dealing with the technical stuff. You're dealing with driving people around, you know, all those things. But it's also super busy. Like, when you get into it, like, I'm like, where'd all the interns go? And they're like, oh, they're just out flown through whatever part of New England or Maritime Canada that we throw them. And then you come back with like very like, you know, sunken eyes and just exhausted at the end of the summer. And I'm like, oh no, we totally broke these poor interns' spirit. And then I usually find that after a couple of months with some reflection and some rest, they come back and really go, oh, I really found some value in this. And what do you think was maybe from that internship year, a really big takeaway for you that maybe helped steering you down that path?
Yeah, it definitely, honestly, the internship totally changed everything that I did from there on out. Cause I went as a business intern and I realized like, I don't want to do business. like I like the outside. I like working with my hands and working hard and having like a tangible product at the end of the day. And I don't want to sit in an office. And that's what I thought I wanted to do before I came out to Maine. It also was the first time I had like ever left home. Really. I went to college about an hour from where I grew up, which was far enough, but not very far either. So it was the first time I was like really feeling out there on my own, doing my own experience. None of my family's very into like outdoor rec or anything like that. So everybody thought I was crazy, just out there alone, climbing, doing whatever. But I realized that I really love it. And I met so many people that I'm still, almost every single person in our intern class is still someone I would consider a close friend of mine. So I made really good relationships and experienced a lot of different things that I definitely never would have gotten to experience if I just stayed in Georgia and, I don't know, started working in a corporate office or something. So then I decided guiding was much more just my speed and did that for a while. And that led me into moving out west and getting into skiing and all of it. So I don't know if I would be where I am today at all if I didn't take a moment to go do that kind of stuff in Maine. So,
and you just bought a house, so clearly it was successful. Right?
Yeah, sure.
Nice.
Yeah.
So let's think about coming out of that intern year. You're like, I'm fired up, I'm motivated. I kind of had some huge growth in my life, kind of on an individual level, like you mentioned. And you're like, I want to keep doing this. So like the next summer you came back guide staff, right? Came off the intern bench, got on the guide bench. What was different or the same about that summer versus the summer before? Because I do feel like they are pretty different,
yeah,
just from my perspective. But what did that feel like for you coming in as kind of first year guide and then like, all right, it's time to go guide now. And here's what you do. And then just spending the summer doing it.
Yeah, definitely. Your second summer, you take on so much responsibility all at once. Whereas with the internship, you're always working with someone else, whether like at your same level or someone above you. You're kind of always being supervised for the most part. And then you come into your second year and it's like, you know, mama bird pushes you out of the nest and it's time to fly, which is terrifying that everything's all of a sudden up to you and your client experience is up to you. And I mentioned I had never placed a CAM before I moved up to Maine. So I always felt like I was just like, coming from behind. I had so much to catch up on, even in my second year. A lot of my pards had been multi-pitch climbing for many years before they started. So yeah, I feel like I was just going for it in a lot of different ways and trying to assess risk the best I knew how. But looking back, I had so much to learn still, which is scary to think about sometimes, but
yeah, it freaks me out all the time.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And during that summer, is there any, this is going back now, so we have to put on our thinking capsule, but was there anything in particular, like, was there a moment, you know, or an interaction either with a client or a peer or a mentor that really helped maybe give you a little more clarity in that period of time as you were doing stuff like, oh, okay, cool. I get it now. Now I can kind of move forward. Anything that resonated?
That's tough. Because that summer I had some My summer got cut short that year. I had some personal tragedy I had to leave for.
Right.
So a lot of that summer is not super clear for me to remember.
Fair enough.
I guess I'll leave it at that.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the next summer. Or actually, there's kind of an interesting bridge, you know, because when you would leave for the summer, you didn't necessarily just stop climbing instruction. I definitely know you did some more climbing instruction for other folks. Maybe kind of talk a little bit about some of the things you did as you were leaving Maine for the summer, kind of through the fall, winter, and then before you came back, some of the other responsibilities.
Yeah, I always struggled coming back because I always loved my time in the summer. And I feel like we do get a lot of mentorship from you and John, as well as all the other guides. And I feel like every day I was challenging myself and learning something new. And then I go home, and I was climbing guiding for my outdoor adventure program after I had gotten my SPI certification. They let me do my own thing, but they very much are like policies and procedures, and you would get very dialed back. And it's
right.
I'm just like setting up top rope anchors and like not really doing much outside of that. So it was fun to like work in different environments. I pretty much only guided like sport climbing areas, 'cause that's all we really have. I guided bouldering for whatever that was, but
scary. Yeah. Bouldering, scary. Never want to do it again.
Yeah. Out of control. But yeah, it was a very different environment to be in. And I think it made me appreciate a lot more kind of the leniency you get in creating your own environment up in Maine. You just have so many more options to, yeah, entertain your clients and have a better time than just top roping.
Nice. Let's think. I personally find that the terrain in where we guide in Acadia a lot in the summertime is pretty interesting relative to a lot of other maybe single and multi-pitch areas that you find. And can be really challenging for a lot of people. Did you find that? And if you did, what were the parts that really were the challenging parts?
I think the most challenging part for me was you move through so many different types of lake terrain travel in Acadia, and being able to recognize when I'm changing, like my mindset needs, when I'm changing terrain, my mindset needs to change too. Like right. When I have someone on an anchor above them and we're top roping at South Otter, that's very different from when I'm doing anything at the South Wall, or if I'm like taking someone, you know, scrambling around short pitching. And sometimes I feel like I wasn't always aware of how much my risk would change. And I always had to remind myself to like catch up to what the terrain was offering me.
Oh. Really nice. I really like that sentiment, as like when the rain came, my mind had to change.
Yeah.
Cause it's like the terrain itself doesn't change, right? Like it's, unless it falls off, but the environmental factors really makes a huge difference there. Cause we got the rain piece, right? But we also have tides.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal. And
yeah, you know, and ability levels, like you just every day, every 4 hours, it's something vastly different. Even though I'm going to the same place, my experiences can be very, very different. Especially if like based on what I do to create that experience, right?
Correct.
Like every client can do what every other client can do.
That's fair.
Especially in the rain.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Acadia does have some pretty interesting quote unquote single pitch terrain that is like, you could easily be like, if this wasn't here, this would be alpine terrain, 100%, you know, or this is totally single pitch terrain, or I'm multi-pitch guiding in single pitch terrain, essentially, you know, like this is very much, you know, it's a very interesting little area that packs a lot of punch for a very small, and then couple the fact that a lot of the climbs end over the water on the ocean, which you can sweep you away, is another very interesting dynamic there.
Definitely.
Cool. So, one of the things I really remember kind of like in your arc is like, I think it was your first year guiding. So the beginning of that season or partway through that season, And I remember kind of, we were at Otter Cliff and just the two of us, I don't remember what we were doing. And I was like, I asked you a question, like, what are we going to do now? And you're like, I don't know. You were like, I have no idea what's going to happen right now, what my plan is. And I was like, okay, fair enough. And then I remember a couple years later, after you had done a lot more guiding and certainly gone out west and kind of gotten more involved with things out west. And I really felt like your presence had changed quite a bit. Like, I kind of like could ask you the same question. I feel like you could give me the same personality, but you would just tell me what we're going to do. Like, no, this is what's happening now. And I'm like, oh, but you were still like very, like there was something very like, even though you weren't the same person, you had changed, but still kind of like your approachability and just kind of like some of your energy was very still constant, which I really appreciated. But it was like clearly like, oh, Shannon has a plan now. Like Shannon 2.5 years ago didn't have a plan. Shannon now has a plan. So if you think about now, as you've gone into some more of the later summers in guiding, like, you know, I think the last summer you got with us, you only guided kind of the end season. It's a really nice time to guide. Like, tell us about like, if you can think about where you were then as a guide, as a person, compared to where you started with us several years before, like, how does that make sense to you?
Yeah. 6 years is a long time. There's a lot of formative years for me. You know, I started when I was 21. Yeah, that's right. 21. So yeah, it's hard to even think back to like 21-year-old Shannon. I don't even think I'd recognize her anymore, but I do think guiding and just getting more into the climbing realm and working through a bunch of different terrain and different areas, I just got a lot more confident in my skills and what I'm able to offer. Whereas like when I started, I quite honestly had no idea what was going on. You know, never multi-pitch climbed, never track climbed even. And I kind of just went out on a limb and decided like, I'm going to leave Georgia and just like threw myself into this thing that became my whole life for a while. But yeah, the confidence in the decision-making and the risk assessment skills that guiding gave me are invaluable. And I use them every day, as well as like client management and people skills, just being able to go into a room of anyone and talk to them about anything, and still have like a good time. Or when I'm patrolling, when I come up to people who are having a bad day, like I definitely think I have a lot more tools in my toolbox because of the situations I've dealt with clients, that I can meet people where they are. And I'm not, you know, some people don't always have that skill. People get frustrated a lot easier, I suppose, which is fair too. I think guiding has fully developed me into what I am today and what I'm willing to offer any job that I go into.
Nice. So if you had to think about, here's Shannon after all these years, all this experience now, sitting on her new porch in her house on a rocking chair, and she sees the 21-year-old, Shannon that could have been or wants to be back, you know, walking across, and you could give them advice about getting into this industry. And we've all learned things sometimes the hard way. Like, mm-hmm. What would you give that person, that 20, 21-year-old getting into this field, specifically around mountain guiding, but the outdoor ed field in general, to like, hey, I had to learn this the hard way. Let me help you. Here you go. Here's a gem.
The biggest thing would be like, you know, get ready to get really tough, really fast. You know, we're going to like just immediately cut out the BS and just kind of own your space a little more. You know, I think coming into it, I wasn't very confident for good reason. I didn't know what I was doing, but I think, you know, it's the outdoor industry for women. It takes a lot to get respect sometimes, not everywhere and not for everyone, but I definitely felt the hurdle of working twice as hard to get to where like a guy started, which there's multiple things that went into that. You know, I didn't have the experience that most of the guys had. And also, I wasn't a guy. And I've had two other female interns my first year, but past that, I think Sav came back the next year. And then after that, I was kind of alone as the only female guide in our company for most of my career there. So I think what I would tell myself getting into this is like, yeah, get tough and hold on. You know, it really did change everything that I did moving forward. But I did have to get really strong in those 6 years and be okay taking up space and asserting myself, saying, no, Dick, I have a plan. Like, right. I'm doing this right now.
Right.
You know, but it took me a while to get there. So,
yeah, I think, you know, like anything, I see cycles, right? And we have seasons where, you know, the guide staff's really cohesive. We have seasons when there's a lot more diversity on the staff. Like this past summer, we had a lot of really strong female interns and guides. So there's a lot of different levels, and they're very motivated and they did an awesome job. And it was really nice to have that balance, or more balance, I should say. I mean, that piece is a part of I have never really experienced of like essentially being, I mean, I shouldn't say I'm not feeling isolated. I definitely feel isolated, but not in the sense of like literally everybody else is different than I am. They're all men in this whole organization at this period of time. Have you found that to be challenging for you in other parts of your journey, kind of in the outdoor world? So I know you do ski patrol work and avalanche mitigation work, and you've done some stuff obviously for outdoor programs besides the climbing school. So is that a pervasive thing in your experience, or is it?
I think it's very situational, and every year it gets a little better, I think. I think a lot of people are talking about this more, and their women are talking about their experiences. And I kind of came in and started this whole thing before people were really discussing that, as far as I was aware. I've been lucky. I work on a really big patrol, and there's a lot of cons that come with it and a lot of pros, but one of them being there are a lot of really strong women that I have to look up to. And there's a lot of women who started like me at Acadia Mountain Guides, you know, kind of one of two or one of three, and they've been there for a while and have shown all the guys that it's going to be okay. You know, that we deserve to like be there and take up the same space as they do. So as far as patrol goes, it's been nice following in some really prominent footsteps there, but there's always the clientele I feel like I've had the hardest time with, more in guiding and patrol, more so than any of my coworkers. Just because it's like, they don't know what they're doing or where they are. And when the average American thinks of a mountain guide, like I am not the thing that comes to mind, right? They think of a Patty or, you know, a tall, long hair, kind of dirty guy who's like really strong.
And we love you, Patty.
Yeah, Patty, you're great. And so, yeah, I think the most I've had to assert myself and kind of deal with that in the workplace has been from guests. I remember my first solo session when I came back my second year. I was so excited to be on the schedule by myself. And I came in to do the whole waiver spiel. And I was like, hey, I'm going to be your guide today. And the dad immediately said, oh, we got stuck with the girl, which it's like, wow. Immediately took all the wind out of my sails. Right. And he laughed and was like, I'm joking, but it's like not funny for me. Right. Like it just took all of my confidence in one joke. And it's like, wow, I worked really hard to be here. And then all that you see is that I'm a woman and that I don't deserve the respect of, you know, my pards that are men. But the fun part is when you do take them out and you put them over the edge and then they're like, ah, and it's like, I'm in charge, you know,
for sure.
Which I don't think that anyone ever has malintent when they express stuff like that. It's just like a societal thing that we all have dealt with, men and women. nobody's ever really trying to talk down to me. I think it's just like that guy, he was joking, right? And it was funny. And like a lot of times in ski patrol, people will be like, you're going to take me, like a guy and a girl will be on the scene. And they're like, why isn't the guy going to take me down? Like, he's so much stronger. And it's, they just don't even know what they're saying. You know what I mean?
Right.
They know how it comes off to the women in the outdoor industry who work as hard or twice as hard to be in that realm. They just have no idea where we're coming from. So that's how I've been able to kind of separate it. But yeah, sometimes it really sucks.
Yeah. I mean, it totally blows me away when I hear comments like that, because it's like, we kind of know, you know, by talking to people, but then you just like, nobody's ever made that comment to me, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly things, you know, I remember I had a conversation with a guide on an Alpine course years ago when I was like 20 and I had really long hair and big sideburns. And he's like, you're going to have a hard time gaining respect from your clients because of how you look. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, oh, I had never really thought about that. And, you know, so I came home and immediately shaved my sideburns, but I still had long hair, but still it was not an issue. Because once again, people kind of expect that from a mountain guide in this country. Yeah. Like, oh, it's kind of this guy with this long hair or kind of like get this mountain look. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it constantly blows me away. The people having to maybe not be allowed to be who they are or, you know, or be readily accepted as this person has just as much quality, if not more, than the next person in this room. Right. And you don't know that, you know, and you're just making a judgment based on X, Y, and Z. Blows my mind. Oh, I'm gonna think about that some more later.
Good.
Yeah, no, it's really true. It's really true. But so Shannon, now that you've kind of moved out of rock guiding, correct? Like you don't. So tell us where your arc is going now. Cause you're still, once again, you're still doing the ski patrol thing, but you're saying you're doing some bike patrol, but like, do you have a little more of a sense of where Shannon's going? I mean, clearly you're not leaving Salt Lake because you have a house.
I did buy a house.
What's the next couple years look like work-wise, professionally, I should say.
Professionally. Yeah. I am pretty committed to the ski patrol gig. I feel, in a lot of ways, just like this job, although it doesn't pay a ton, I feel like I was almost made for it. I just love what I do every day, even if it's a dumb rope line, you know, even the dumb stuff. I'm just like stoked to be there every day. And I can't imagine myself feeling that way anywhere else at this point in my life. So, I'm staring down the barrel of ski patrolling indefinitely.
Wow.
Whatever that looks like. My goals would be to, continue to step up in our avalanche mitigation programs, take more educational courses about our snowpack and all that kind of good stuff. I also am working on maybe in the next handful of years, getting an avalanche dog and raising a puppy up to be one of those dogs that sniffs you out of the snow if I get the opportunity. So that would be kind of the direction I'm focusing on for now. I have stepped out of guiding for the most part, and I've stepped out of climbing in a lot of ways too. It's always been a love-hate relationship for me. So I've enjoyed I've taken like a full year of just not doing, I've climbed a little, but not any guiding at all. And it's been nice, but I would hate to think that I never do any of that again. So maybe in the future, doing something.
Nice. The avalanche work, you know, when I was younger, I really like avalanche stuff, and I thought I wanted to do more with avalanche, like for, as a professional forecaster or someone does a lot more mitigation work. I mean, in some ways I am a professional forecaster. I just do it with my clients,
right?
But there's not a lot of opportunity on the East Coast, and I was kind of unwilling to move out West. So you've got a lot of opportunity out there, which is really cool to go in different directions with that. If you choose.
I don't know why. I just love the stuff. It's fun to study. It's fun to talk about. Fun to throw bombs. I don't know.
So actually, I mean, this is super relevant, you know, like what about the Avalanche stuff? Because you've mentioned a lot about how guiding has helped with your risk evaluation, hazard evaluation and risk mitigation. Maybe how does that shape what you're doing with the Avalanche stuff? And maybe just what's your biggest fear or uncertainty with that part of your job, that part of your work, the mitigation part, Avalanche part?
Yeah, I think everyone can, you know, kind of agree on the biggest fear of like snow science isn't actually science at all.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. You know, I can dig a pit and I can talk about facets and I can do all these tests and know the water weight and blah, blah, blah. But then at the end of the day, like things don't fall in categories the way they do in like an actual scientific field of study. I can make a bunch of educated guesses about what I think is happening, but it's also completely out of my control all the time, which is definitely the scariest part. The other scary part is we do have a really big patrol and we have a lot of different people coming in with different backgrounds. And sometimes you get put out on route with people you don't know how well they're going to dig you out if something happens. And that's always something in the back of my head as well. But as far as guiding goes, I do think the like reading terrain and evaluating risk, I do that every single day. And I started doing that as a climbing guide. And a lot of it translates right into snow. It's really the situational awareness. Like, what am I doing? And does it make sense? You know, nice. Where am I going? Does it make sense for my goal that I'm going to accomplish? Looking around you, like, is there, like, I should notice if there's other avalanches in the area that have already happened. I should notice if I'm going to cross underneath a cornice or into a slide path or anything like that. So I think in the guiding realm, I've been taught to take a step back and look at the full picture, which is not something that everyone has learned through their past experiences. So I definitely think it gives me a leg up as far as like, you know, I can always rely on the fact that I know how to move through terrain.
Shannon, I'm so happy. That whole little monologue there has made me so happy about understanding that piece. I think about that stuff all the time. It really is awesome to talk to you because I haven't talked to you in a little while.
Yeah,
we kind of check in every once in a while, but I haven't seen you because like you said last summer, I believe it was your last summer that you were with us. And it's so awesome to see your progression and see where you are and to be able to like articulate that piece you just did was really, really wonderful. So I'm super excited for you about that. You've got some passion for this thing that can go a lot of different directions. You're very, very happy. You got a place. You have, you know, you actually have a home base. Yeah, you're moving forward.
Yeah.
So cool.
Doing the thing, you know?
Definitely send pictures of the avalanche puppy.
Oh yeah. In, you know, 3 to 5 years, I will send you a picture for sure.
Yes. Yes. Cause I'm kind of a big fan of animals in general.
Oh yeah.
But certainly dogs. Mm-hmm. But, I think Dick would be an awesome name for a dog.
We'll discuss it.
Yeah, we'll discuss it later. So, well, it hasn't necessarily been an awesome name for a human, so it might not be an awesome name for a dog. Talk about microaggressions. Holy cow.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of jokes.
Well, Shannon, we are right about 30 minutes. It's a pretty nice conversation. We've kind of gone a lot of places, but before we sign off, either last thoughts, words of wisdom, good night, whatever you want to say, anything before we turn off the recording?
I have no wisdom. I think that's a no.
Okay, fair enough. I think you actually have a lot of wisdom. So it just comes in time. Wait till you get to my age. You're like, holy cow, I know so much now, but so little. So hopefully. Well, Shannon, I wish you luck, and I also hope you have a very safe season. Who knows what this winter will spring. And yeah, avalanches are pretty real. So
yeah,
be careful out there.
I hope you also have a safe winter.
I'm going to try my best. So, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Yeah. Appreciate you.
Cool. Nice to chat. I appreciate you. Thanks, Shannon.
Bye, Dick.